Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Happy first Friday of Lent to you all. Hope you're enjoying your fish, your alligator, even your capybara, I'm learning, is something you're allowed to eat during Lent. And hope you enjoy 2 hours today of Ask Me Anything with our very own Jimmy Akin. The number to call is 888-318-7884, but the lines are already full. People lining up to talk to our very own senior apologist, author, speaker, debater, and podcaster extraordinaire, Jimmy Akin. Welcome back to the show, Jimmy.
How you doing, Thomas?
I am doing great. You know, I feel like it's a better Lenten Friday than normal. I don't know why. I'm not quite as hungry as normal. Maybe that's not in the spirit of Lent. I'm not sure, but I'm powering through, probably on the adrenaline of, you know, filling in to host this show again.
So all of our questions today are coming from TikTok. Is that right?
Not quite. I do have one down at the bottom of our dock here, but we do have quite a bit of calls on the line. Before we get to them, Jimmy, of course, is the host proprietor of several podcasts, including the Jimmy Akin podcast, The Mysteries of the Faith, available through Catholic.com, any podcast app, and of course, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Jimmy, what do we have coming up on each of those?
Well, this previous Monday on the Jimmy Akin podcast, we had a look at the mystery of the heart. You know, we often think about thought as being associated with the brain rather than the heart. But back in biblical times, they tended to associate thought with the heart rather than the brain. And so we take a look at that and what science has to say, and it's a little more complex than people commonly assume. Also, in terms of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, today we had an episode of Patrons Questions come out, and a lot of the questions were asked by the children of our patrons. So it's a children's questions focused one in which I take on questions like, well, if Santa Claus dies, would he go to heaven or not?
Well, I think we know that about St. Nicholas, don't we? But yeah, the fictional character Santa Claus, that might be a little thorny.
Yeah, dude.
I'm sorry. We got the hypothetically fictional character Santa Claus may or may not be.
you want to be a little more circumspect. We've got children listening whose parents may or may not have decided what they want to do on that subject.
Very, very true. We could say that a book maybe is more fictional than certain other conceptions of Santa Claus. Anyway, what else is coming up on the Jimmy Akin podcast?
Well, I've got a lot of plans, but we'll be talking about those in times to come.
Okay, cool. And then Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, what is on the horizon there?
Well, let's take a look on the schedule. Coming up next Friday, we're going to be looking at the UFO observables. Back in 2017, when the ATIP program from the Defense Department was announced, it was revealed that there had been five characteristics that UFOs, or UAPs as they're calling them now, display that we can't really duplicate. And it turns out that there is a single technology that, if it can be invented, would explain all five of the UFO observables. And so we're going to be talking about what that technology is and how it would explain them.
Fantastic. Sounds like a good old-fashioned UFO episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World that all his fans will gobble up eagerly. And you can become a fan, too, if you just listen to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World anywhere you get your podcasts, and especially on Jimmy Akin's YouTube channel. As I said, it's Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin today on Catholic Answers Live. And by the way, my name is Thomas Graff. I'm filling in for Cy Kellett today. He will be back with us shortly, of course. Don't you worry. Normally, I manage the social media here, which is probably why Jimmy mentioned that we might have a TikTok question coming up later. But for now, most of the show is going to be your calls from the phones, which are all filled up. So, Jimmy, shall we dive into them?
Let's go.
Okie doke, let's go to Ohio, where Christopher is watching on YouTube. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, if someone venially sins by a category of sin that is by its nature grave matter, has one committed a grave offense that he's only venially culpable for? If so, does one have a similar degree of responsibility to avoid such sins as mortal sins?
Okay, so the answer to the first question, if you sin venially in a category that's potentially mortal, have you committed a grave sin? No, you haven't. You've committed a venial sin. So to give an example, the category of theft is potentially grave if there's someone who is, let's say they've got $1,000 to their name, and that's all the money they have in the world, and I steal their $1,000, well, then I've deprived them of their means of living, and that's a grave sin. So that would be an example of a category that's potentially grave. However, if there's someone who's rich, let's say Elon Musk, and I steal a nickel from him, it's still in the same category as theft, but there's no way I'm doing grave damage to Elon Musk by stealing a nickel from him. And so that would be only a venial sin. It has what's referred to as parvity of matter or smallness of matter. So it is not a grave sin, even though the category is potentially grave.
Are there what for categories that are by nature grave, would that be same or would that be different?
Well, there is a common opinion that all categories against the sixth commandment, or that all sins against the sixth commandment, are in principle grave, but they can be rendered light through various circumstances, like inattention and things like that. So if a person is so the sixth category is thou shalt not commit adultery, and this into this category go all sexual sins. And like I've said, there is a common opinion that every category of sexual sin is in principle grave, but a particular sin may not be grave through one or another reason. Like if someone is in their thought life is starting to have fantasies about having sex with someone they're not married to, and they catch themselves, so these aren't fully deliberate, then it's not going to be a grave sin. It would at most be venial. So it's still not a grave sin in that case. It's not a mortal sin.
Christopher, thanks so much for that call. Thanks for starting us off on this Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin. The number to call is 888-318-7884 if you want to ask a question of Jimmy. And the next person asking a question is Manny, calling from Sacramento, California. Manny, also watching on YouTube. Manny, welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you. My question is, what is the meaning of Genesis chapter 49, verses 14 and 15?
Okay, so we want to start by reading the verses, Genesis 49, verses 14 and 15. This is part of the final speech it's a prophetic speech given by Jacob, the patriarch Jacob, as he's about to die. So this is Israel himself. And it's a prophetic speech that deals with the fates of his 12 sons and the tribes that come from them. And verses 14 and 15 deal with Issachar, the patriarch Issachar here, and the tribe that is known as the tribe of Issachar. And it says, Issachar is a strong donkey crouching between the sheepfolds. He saw a resting place that was good and land that was pleasant, so he bowed his shoulder to the burden and became a servant of forced labor. Well, without doing further study on this passage, it seems to me that we have a recognition that the tribe of Issachar was a tribe that found good land, that inherited good land when the 12 tribes came into the promised land, and the people of Issachar were willing to undertake labor in order to have the benefits of living in that good land. At least that's what occurs to me off the top of my head.
Manny, what do you think of that?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks for the call, Manny. It's Ask Me Anything, as I said, with Jimmy Akin. Again, Matt, that'll open up a line as our previous caller drops off. So if you want to call quick because the lines are full. The number is 888-318-7884. I want to tell you guys real quick that, you know, here at Catholic Answers, we're always, you know, we're always on the lookout for you know, the next apologists, but also just the next partners in the vineyard, as our President Chris Cech likes to put it, of who is trying to reach souls in ever ancient, ever new ways. And one of those is the Holy Habits app that we are partnering with now. Holy Habits is a Catholic spiritual growth app designed to help users grow in their faith, develop their virtues, track their spiritual progress. And it's rooted in time-tested principles of spiritual direction and the wisdom of the saints. But it uses newer tools to help you do that. So you can use its spiritual growth tracker, for instance, to log your faith-based goals. You say, I want to pray this many times a day. I want to read this much of the Bible. You can track that. You can use AI to give you some personalized recommendations based on Catholic teachings, of course. You can look at daily gospel reflections and personalize saintly wisdom. You know, read scripture, reflect on the faith, and receive insights from the saints that are tailored to the spiritual journey you're walking on. You can log your confessions and keep track of the vices you're trying to battle over time. All this and lots more. There's a lot more that you can find on the Holy Habits app. And we are offering it for 3 months for free. Visit Catholic.com, click the banner at the top to see how you can do that. Again, Catholic.com, click the banner at the top to find out how you can get 3 months of the Holy Habits app for free. Once again, it's Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more questions from Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1980. Mother Angelica, who is hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, orders a satellite dish and transmission equipment. A wealthy benefactor gives her the $250,000 letter of credit she needs to apply for an FCC license to broadcast.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Ask Me Anything with our very own senior apologist, Jimmy Akin here. My name is Thomas Graff, normally running the social media here at Catholic Answers, but today taking another break to fill in for Cy Kellett. Once again, the number to call is 888-318-7884 when the lines are open, but everybody wants to talk to Jimmy today for good reason. So we're going to move right along to Nashville, Tennessee, where Lindsay is watching on YouTube. So many people watching on YouTube today. That's great news. Lindsay, hi. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
So my question is, in regards to NFP, I know that it's valid to use NFP to avoid pregnancy if you have grave reason to do so. And I'm curious, how do you discern whether or not you have grave reason?
Well, you will hear some folks say that you need a grave reason to use NFP, but that's not actually what Humanae Vitae, the 1968 papal document that deals with contraception, says. Instead, it uses a different test. It says that recourse to natural cycles can be used for a just reason. And a just reason is any reason that is not illegal. And so so the actual standard that we find in the relevant document is a much lower standard than what you sometimes hear people saying.
Lindsay, does that clarify your question for you a bit?
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you for the call, Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Once again, it's Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin, and our next caller is again watching on YouTube, Gabe calling from Oregon. Gabe, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hello, Mr. Thomas, Mr. Jimmy. My question is very quick. I was watching a Trinity debate between a Trinitarian and a non-Trinitarian, and he posed the question the following way. Was Yahweh ever tempted in relation to Jesus in the desert based off of James 1:13, where it says God cannot be tempted with evil things? How would you answer that as a Catholic, and what resources can you provide to help me better answer questions such as that?
Well, the first thing is we need to get straight what is actually going on in the so-called temptation of Jesus in the desert. The term temptation, the term that's that gets translated temptation in Greek, is the same as the Greek term for test. And so you could either translate this as Jesus was tempted in the desert or as Jesus was tested in the desert. I would say this is certainly the way I've always looked at the passage, is that what's really going on there is the devil is testing Jesus to find out if he's the Son of God or not. He doesn't know the answer to that question yet. And so what he's trying to do is present Jesus with things that would tempt ordinary people, and that an ordinary person who's not the Son of God might give way to. And if Jesus gives in to one of these, you know, tests, like turn stones into bread or whatever so you can have some food to eat, then that would reveal that Jesus is in fact not the Son of God. But because he's the all-holy Son of God, he's not going to give in to any of these things. And consequently, when the devil repeatedly fails to get him to give in to a temptation, Jesus passes the test, and his supreme holiness as the Son of God is revealed. So I would say that that Yahweh, and Jesus is Yahweh, I would say that that Yahweh was not tempted in the sense of having disordered desires in this situation or in any other situation. Instead, he was tested in the sense that he was presented with things that an ordinary person might give into, but that Yahweh would not give into. And so I think whether or not you would say Yahweh was tempted in this situation is going to depend on how you're using the term, but fundamentally it's not possible for Yahweh, either considered in the person of Jesus or more broadly, to actually have disordered desires. And so Yahweh can't be tempted in that sense.
Gabe, does that help you out?
Sorry. It does a lot. Thank you very much. I have something else that I will ask at a different time. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Look forward to hearing you again, Gabe. Thanks for calling. Again, another line opens up for calling Jimmy Akin, so call 888-318-7884 if you'd like to have Jimmy answer your question right here. Let's go next to Jamie calling from Alabama. Once again, Jamie is watching on YouTube. We are having such a strong YouTube audience today. Jamie, go ahead. Thanks for joining us from YouTube.
Hi. So it's kind of bad because my question's a little bit silly, but in Star Trek, they have the Prime Directive, and me and my daughter were arguing about whether that would follow, like, Catholic theology as far as witnessing and that, if you followed the Prime Directive.
In terms of witnessing?
Well, like, preaching, teaching people about Jesus if you're following the Prime Directive and not interfering in other, like, alien cultures.
Oh, well, so the Prime Directive in Star Trek is principally about technology. And so and it's varied over time exactly what constitutes the Prime Directive. In the early days, in Those Old Scientists, in the original series, basically it only, the Prime Directive only applied to civilizations that hadn't yet developed warp drive. And so if a planet, if a civilization was confined to a single planet, then you didn't want to share information with them that would be technologically disruptive. Later, by the time of the next generation, they had developed a more expansive understanding of the Prime Directive that's like, don't interfere in the natural development of a civilization. And that was always irrational. There are elements to the Prime Directive that makes sense. You know, you don't want to give nuclear bombs to people who are in the Stone Age. They're not going to be able to use them responsibly. So, you know, there are elements of truth that are reasonable to the Prime Directive. But by the time of the next generation, it was just being applied in all kinds of crazy ways, most notably in one of the next gen movies where basically they're applying the Prime Directive to a group of people who live on a planet that has magic rings that make people immune from aging, and they're applying it to a culture that just has a few hundred people at most in it. And the problems with the Prime Directive became so obvious that in one of the short treks where it's Spock's first day on the Enterprise, he's talking to the first officer, number one, and he asks her, has it ever occurred to you that the Prime Directive is morally indefensible? And she basically says, if you care about your Starfleet career, never say that again. But that's an acknowledgement from the writers of the show that they've kind of written themselves into a corner with the Prime Directive. Now, if you take the next generation understanding of the Prime Directive of not interfering with the natural development of a culture, then that does potentially come into conflict with the Christian duty to bear witness to Jesus Christ. As Christians, we have a responsibility to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with everybody, and that's going to apply, you know, presumably to people on other planets too. Now, that doesn't mean you do so immediately. I could see it being reasonable to say, okay, well, this is a pre-warp civilization, so we're not really going to tell them that we're aliens until they're ready for it. But then once they're ready for that knowledge, then we would want to share the message of Jesus Christ with them as well. You could even argue that they need the message of Jesus Christ earlier than that. So I do see that although there are elements or versions of the Prime Directive that are reasonable, that there are also versions of the Prime Directive that are going to be in conflict with the Christian duty to evangelize.
By the way, Jamie, don't like feel bad about calling Catholic Answers with a moral theology question coming from Star Trek, because I don't know if there's a better call or better show you could have called into it. I mean, not only is Jimmy an apologist of over 30 years, but you also, one of the podcasts you host is also about Star Trek, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And yeah. In general, I treat all questions straight. It doesn't matter what the question is to me. I'll give it a straight answer. So Star Trek morality questions, totally fine with me.
Yeah. Don't feel bad about that, Jamie. Please call in again with all of your Star Trek moral theology questions. Love to take them. Okay. Let's go on. Again, it's Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin, and that means anything, including moral theology questions coming from Star Trek. Brent does not have one of those questions, but Brent is calling from Arkansas, watching on Guess Where YouTube. Brent, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hey, Jimmy. So quick question. I'm about two-thirds Catholic, going through RCIA right now and coming up on First Confession. And having been baptized in another faith 20-some-odd years ago, so I've got to cover a multitude of sins from a very long time. I was looking for a few pointers maybe on, is it permissible to bring a list in? What length of time should I expect for a first confession? Maybe some pointers that you could provide there.
Okay, so I've been through the same thing. You know, I became Catholic as an adult, and I had been baptized in another tradition. So, you know, I had a first confession that I had to go through in similar situations. In a similar situation, and it is absolutely permissible to bring a list. of what you intend to confess, not just for your first confession, but for any confession. What you want to do, though, is be very sure that that list does not fall into the wrong hands. And so if you if it's, let's say it's a written list, you know, on a piece of paper, then I would suggest either burning the piece of paper afterwards or tearing it into tiny little bits and flushing it down a toilet or something like that, so it doesn't fall into the hands of someone who shouldn't be reading it. Another security measure that you could take, and this would also apply to if it's a list on your phone, is using code in the list. So you don't write exactly what it is you need to confess. Instead, you write something that's maybe an abbreviation or some other word that will remind you of what it is you need to confess, but you don't use the exact word itself. And that way, even if it does fall into somebody's hands that shouldn't be reading it, then it won't make any sense to them because you put it in code. That's what I'd have to say about the list. In terms of how much time, well, it really depends on you and how much you need to confess. You mentioned it's 20 years. One thing I would say is you don't need to explain circumstances. All you need to say is, this is what I did, and I did it this much to the best of your ability. You don't need to mention anything surrounding that. And if you follow that principle, you can keep even a 20-year confession fairly short.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Deepen your connection to the Church's holy days and seasons while you draw on the wisdom of the Church Fathers. Feasts of Our Fathers, the new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, is a treasury of history, prayers, insights, and lessons that will bring you closer to the earliest of Catholic traditions. Take your prayer life and your solidarity with the Church, past and present, to a new level. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers today at shop.catholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
It's groovy music time, which means halfway through the hour with Jimmy Akin on Ask Me Anything show. This is Catholic Answers Live. My name is Thomas Graff. I'm the social media manager most of the time here at Catholic Answers, but on the occasion sometimes when Cy Kellett is out, they ask me to slip in just for 2 hours and host the show instead. As I said, Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of tons of articles on Catholic.com, author of books like A Daily Defense, the Bible is a Catholic Book, The Words of Eternal Life. One of the most popular books I see people still talking about online in my social media work is The Fathers Know Best. People still go crazy for Jimmy Akin's book, The Fathers Know Best. All of those available at shop.catholic.com. And, of course, We are taking your calls here on Catholic Answers Live for Jimmy Akin. All the lines are full, so we're going to keep on going right to Brent, calling from right in Jimmy's backyard in Arkansas. It's a bigger state than that, I know. But
actually, we did Brent's call.
You are so right. We are not in your backyard anymore. I'm sorry about that. We're actually going to Washington, where Maura is listening. First caller not watching on YouTube. Wow. Listening on KHSS instead. Maura, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Yes, hello. At the end of Mass last weekend, the celebrant took a couple of minutes to tell us about recent changes to immigration regulations that will have a drastic effect on priests in our diocese, many of whom came from Mexico. My sister in another state told me this will affect priests in her diocese who came from Africa. I didn't understand well what our priest described, but I have the impression that people without permanent residency will need to leave the United States and may not be able to return for many years. Priests here are stretched thin, even with this extra help, and all of us will be greatly affected if their number decreases. Can you help me better understand what changes were made and how priests from other countries will be affected?
Well, I'll do what I can, but I have to tell you, I'm not a legal expert, and I'm not familiar with what the changes you're referring to. I'm aware of efforts to deport people who are in the country illegally, especially if they've committed other crimes. And most priests who are in this country are here legally. They have a visa to come into the country. And so most of them are not going to be in any danger of deportation. Now, it is for people who are in the country legally, it is periodically required that they leave the country, even if it's just like for a day, and then come back in and get a new entry visa. And that's nothing new. That's been the case with lots of people, you know, who are in the country legally. It's been that way for years and years and years. Now, there may have been some kind of category shift that means that priests are going to have to do this too, whereas previously they did not. But I would think that this is not going to be a major thing, because most part of the reason for the exit and return policy that the United States has had is to create a point where there can be a reassessment of, you know, is this someone we want in the country? Do they have a job here? You know, things like that. And all of the priests who are in this country working for dioceses, you know, who come from somewhere else, they've all got a job here. And they all would be considered desirable aliens. And so as far as I'm aware, this would be a formality that priests might need to go through who are not citizens of the United States or who don't have a certain kind of immigration status here. But I wouldn't anticipate this causing major problems for them, because they're clearly here with a purpose. They have specialized skills. They have a job here, you know, things like that. I don't think it's going to be a problem for most of them. It's just an extra formality they may need to go through.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Yep. Thank you for the call, Maura. Please do call again anytime. It's Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin, and our next caller is Tom, calling from Michigan. Tom is listening on Ave Maria Radio. Tom, welcome to the show. Tom, do we have you? Okay, we don't have Tom right now. Hang on the line, Tom. We're going to check back in with you. Make sure you're still there. In the meantime, Rob is listening in Westmont, Pennsylvania. I believe that's Pennsylvania. Watching on YouTube. Rob
should be PA, but PN is probably Pennsylvania.
Yeah, not Pensacola. Surely that's not even a state. Westmont, Pennsylvania, listening on YouTube. Rob, do we have you?
Hopefully you do. I mean, I'm just floating out here in the wind. It's cold out here, but anyway.
Yeah, we got your voice at least.
If I may say thank you for being the first host to wear a cool shirt. Jimmy, you might want to take notes.
Oh, we don't have to bag on Jimmy's shirt.
Well, thank you for calling in, Rob, and I look forward to talking to you again some other time.
No. Let's keep Rob here. I like him. I like Rob. Now, we don't need to bag on Jimmy's look. Thanks for the compliment on the Hawaiian shirt. I've been wearing one every Friday since the start of college, so I'm glad someone is finally giving me props for that. But Jimmy's purple is iconic, and I don't think that's going to go anywhere. So thanks anyway, Rob.
If I may, real quick, I have two questions. I'll be quick. First, I am a lapsed Catholic trying to get back into the religion. I need to know if there's a book, a source on Catholic traditions I can refer to that will help me to reconnect with the church. I tried a couple of years ago and failed miserably. Well, I think I'm going to do it this time a bit more grown up, so I would like to, A, do that, and then, B, should I go back to confession? Of course I should go back to confession, but should I redo my life's confession to catch me up to where I am today? Because I really do think I wasn't taking it seriously, and it was an abomination disguised as trying to be good, but... I guess I really, to be a grown up and to look in the mirror, I guess I should redo everything. Thank you very, very much for your time, gentlemen. Again, very cool shirt. Need to leave a picture. I'm sure everybody, will like it. And you guys have a great weekend. Thanks. And have a wonderful Easter.
You're the best, Rob. Thanks. Jimmy?
Okay, so in regard to a book of traditions to reconnect with the Catholic Church, I'm not exactly sure what would fit that bill. I mean, there are various books about Catholic practices and so forth. But fundamentally, the thing that really occurs to me is you may want to read the Catechism. Especially if you don't have a copy of the Catechism, I'd get a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's not just traditions. It also deals a lot with Scripture and church teaching, but that's the fundamental. It's a presentation of the fundamentals of the Catholic faith. Now, it can be a little much, and there's also a shorter version known as the Compendium of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which is much shorter, and it's just the essential points, and it's written in a Q&A format. But I would tend to recommend either getting the Catechism of the Catholic Church or the Compendium of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and both of those are easily available for order. In terms of going to confession, I agree, yeah, you need to go to confession, but in terms of should you do a general confession, that applies to the entirety of your post-baptismal life, I would say that's up to you. If you think it would be spiritually beneficial to do a general confession, then you can do a general confession. But it wouldn't be necessary. All that's necessary for you to confess are any mortal sins you've committed since your last confession, whenever that was, and any sins that you, from before that, that are mortal and that you have confidence were not properly confessed previously. And in making that latter determination, you should cut yourself slack, because there can be a tendency to foster scrupulosity if people start thinking, did I properly confess that, or was I really repentant? Assume you were. And unless you know for a fact that you had not repented of a sin, or unless you know for a fact that you had not properly confessed it, then assume you did. And all you really need to do under that, under those parameters, is just confess the mortal sins that haven't yet been confessed. If you think it would be beneficial to go beyond that, to do a more general confession, you can. Obviously, if you do a general confession, you want to set up an appointment for it. You don't want to just show up in line one Saturday and disrupt the procedure for everybody else there by springing a general confession on a priest unexpected. So, if you do want to do a general confession, you could call a priest and say, here's what I'd like to do. Can we set up a time for that? And that way, the priest, and you can have the kind of time available to do it properly in a way that doesn't inconvenience other people.
Rob, thanks for the call. I just want to tack on to Jimmy's excellent suggestion that you should read the Catechism if you're trying to relearn basic Catholic teachings. If you or any other listeners in a similar situation are kind of more podcast people than book people, I mean, you're listening to Catholic Answers, so you might well be. Our good friends at Ascension have also produced a podcast called The Catechism in a Year, where Father Mike Schmitz, a great priest, he goes through it. It's divided up into, you know, 365 sections, basically, and Father Mike Schmitz reads it through and helps explain some interesting or difficult passages. I listened to that podcast. I found it very helpful, even just reading along with Father Mike reading it to me, or just listening to it in the car. So again, if Rob, or if you or anyone else wants to explore the Catechism in that way, that's available for free anywhere you get podcasts. All right, free shilling for Ascension is over. They do great work. I don't mind doing that. But we do want to also let you guys know that you can get 3 months of the Holy Habits app for free. This relative newcomer on the scene, that we really like the work that they're doing, that provides you with tools to grow in holiness, modern tools to grow in holiness, but in ancient ways, basically. I read some of the services they offer earlier. I want to read a few more of them to you. Prayer reminders. This app can help you stay consistent with your spiritual commitments. It can link you to accountability groups that will help you stay motivated by encouraging one another in your pursuit of holiness. Iron sharpens iron and all that. It's really important to, you know, have someone keeping you accountable. Spiritual director connection. You can share weekly reports with your spiritual director, receive personalized messages to help you along. And easy habit logging. You can track your spiritual habits on the go by logging your progress through text messages. In today's busy world, Holy Habits provides structured, faith-based guidance to help Catholics build lasting spiritual habits and grow in holiness. And you can get 3 months of the Holy Habits app for free by going to Catholic.com and clicking on the banner at the top. Once again, that's Catholic.com. Click the banner at the top to find out how you can get 3 months of the Holy Habits app for free. We'll be right back to wrap up this hour of Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin right after this.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
On Mother Angelica Answering the Call, Father Joseph and Doug Keck mine decades of phone calls answered by Mother Angelica. No subject is off limits and no problem too big for the wisdom and compassion of the one and only Mother Angelica.
Mother Angelica Answering the Call, Sunday afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. My name is Thomas Graff, normally hosting the social media, but today I am filling in for Cy Kellett here on Catholic Answers Live. It's an Ask Me Anything, 2 hours of Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin. We're right smack in the middle of it, and the lines are full. I will give out the number. It's 888-318-7884, but as I said, the lines are full. Keep calling, though, because when people drop out, that's when calls come right in. We just finished with Rob. Sorry, Robert, calling from just up the road from us in Carlsbad, California, is listening on Sirius XM. Robert, you are next up with Jimmy Akin. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you for taking my call and this a comment that Catholic Answers I've listened to for quite some time. I've really gained so much knowledge, and thank you for your show.
That's terrific,
really
Robert.
Appreciated.
You're welcome.
So, my main question is about ashes. So I'm a Eucharistic minister in my parish, and we assisted the father in with ashes on this past Ash Wednesday, right? So he has given me permission to take the ashes with me because I also visit a juvenile detention center on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So my question is, can if they're a Protestant, a non-Catholic Christian, but they've been baptized, can they receive ashes? Is it proper for them to ask and receive ashes?
Yes, they are allowed to.
Question on a previous call.
I'm sorry, what was the last bit, sir?
I had a follow-up question on the immigration. I had a comment on that. I have a little knowledge on it.
Okay, I'm afraid we don't really do comments on a Q&A show, but in terms of your question, it is not a problem for non-Catholics to receive ashes from Ash Wednesday. So if a non-Catholic would like to receive them, then go ahead and give it to them. It's not a problem.
Thanks for that call, Robert. Sorry, we do have a lot of questions to get through, so we do need to move on down the line to another Robert calling from Missouri. Listening.
This is like chain down the Roberts. This is three Roberts in a row.
It really is. Rob, Robert, and Robert again. First, we had all YouTube listeners, and
like
now we have Roberts.
Ed, and Eddie.
Ed, and Eddie. Nice poll, Jimmy. Very nice. Robert calling from Missouri, listening on 89.1. Third Robert in a row. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Yeah, so how does Aristotle's distinction between substance and accidents help explain the doctrine of transubstantiation?
Well, that's going to depend on exactly how you understand Aristotle's distinction here, and there are different ways of doing that. I would note that Aristotle's distinction is not actually used in church documents. It has been used by some theologians, such as St. Thomas Aquinas, to articulate transubstantiation, but it's not actually the language that the church uses. And so I prefer to stick to the language that the church uses rather than using the language of a particular philosophical school like Aristotelianism. Basically, the language that the church uses is substance and appearances rather than substance and accidents. Also, sometimes you'll see the term appearances rendered species, but that just means appearances. And so in philosophical jargon, a substance, at least in this context, refers to what a thing is. Then, and that's separate, then what does it appear to be? So in the case of transubstantiation, the substance is Jesus Christ. He's really truly and substantially present under the appearances of bread and wine. So prior to the transubstantiation, you had bread and wine. It was what it appeared to be. The substance was bread and wine, and it appeared to be bread and wine. And then when the transubstantiation happens, the substance of bread and wine becomes the substance of Jesus Christ. So what it is has now changed, but the appearances remain the same. The species or appearances of bread and wine are still the same, and so it still looks like bread and wine, even though that's no longer what it actually is.
Robert, did that help you out?
Yeah, thanks.
Great. Thank you for the question, Robert. Let's move on over to Staten Island, New York, right now, where Donnie is listening. Oh, this is cool. Donnie's listening on X, formerly known as Twitter. We just started live streaming the show on X a few months ago, I think, and we get a good number of viewers on there pretty much right away. I was very pleased to see that as the normal social media manager. Donnie, how long have you been tuning in on X? Do you do that every day?
Oh, no, just today.
Okay,
just figured out how to use it.
Hey, glad to have another one. Yeah, go ahead with the question,
Donnie. I saw a live emblem, so I said, let me press that.
Yeah.
So, actually, thanks for taking my call. I just have one question. Even the deacon friend of mine couldn't figure this out. So, during the Eucharistic prayer, right, so the mystery of faith, which we sing it and proclaim it, but the one thing that it always, like, kind of troubled me, that when they use this verse, when we eat this bread and drink this cup, we proclaim your death, O Lord, until you come again. And there's no mention of the resurrection. So I don't know how you could rectify it as a mystery of faith. Do you know what I mean? So one would be, we proclaim your death, O Lord, and profess your resurrection. The other one, save the world by your cross and resurrection. But it seems like 90% of the time we use this mystery of faith. And it just seems to me that we're singing it and we're proclaiming, but there's no mention of the resurrection when we do that.
Okay,
so it's not much of a mystery.
Well, no, there is a mystery. There are actually several mysteries there. So when we eat this bread and drink this cup, we proclaim your death, O Lord, until you come again. There's actually several different mysteries there. What a mystery is, in a theological context, is something that human reason alone cannot tell you. It's something that's revealed by God. And so if something is revealed by God that you couldn't deduce by reason alone, it's a theological mystery. And the mere fact that that it's no longer bread and wine, but it has become Jesus Christ himself, that's a theological mystery. Also, it refers to when Jesus is going to come again. Well, that's something else that reason alone won't tell you, that there's going to be a second coming. That has to be revealed to us by God. And then there's the mystery of what happened during Jesus's death, you know, the heroine of hell and so forth. That's something that's only touched upon lightly in the New Testament, but it deals with another theological mystery. The reason that this particular memorial acclamation is used frequently is it is almost a direct quotation of 1 Corinthians 11:26. And so we basically lifted a line from St. Paul here and are using it. What St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11:26 is, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the death of the Lord until he comes." Basically, that got taken, and the Paul's second person pronoun, you, whenever you do this, becomes the first person plural pronoun, we, when we eat this bread and drink this cup. And then they've taken the third person reference to you proclaim the death of the Lord to we proclaim your death, O Lord. So we've made that a second person reference there. But basically, other than that, it's the same. And it refers to several theological mysteries.
Oh, that clears it up for me. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No, no problem.
Great. Glad to hear that, Donnie. Thanks so much for the call, and thanks so much for tuning in on X. I hope more people continue to do that. Let's move on down to Steve now, listening on YouTube. Steve, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi. Thank you guys so much for taking my question. Basically, I'm in catechism class, and they're teaching that all temporal punishment is removed by going to confession. So if you just, you know, if you just get out of confession, get hit by a car, you'd skip purgatory. It seems like from Karl Broussard's book and from the catechism that temporal punishment is specifically there for forgiven sins, like do-over after sins are forgiven. So can you give clarification on whether confession removes temporal sin, temporal punishment?
Okay, Steve, I'm afraid that there was an internet interruption there for just a second. So I'm not sure I heard your entire I didn't hear your entire question, but let me do what I can with it, and then you tell me if I've done what you're looking for, because we're getting real close to the end of the show. The Catechism of the Catholic Church understands that so-called temporal punishments, and it kind of puts that in quotations, deal with disordered desires that remain even after we've been forgiven of a sin. And merely going to confession does not remove all of our disordered desires, and therefore it does not remove all of the so-called temporal punishments that that we have to deal with. If someone is claiming that they're all removed, they're going beyond what the church actually teaches.
Steve, is that what you were looking for?
Thank you so much. That answers my questions, and I really appreciate it. God bless.
Oh, you too.
Perfect. Thanks so much for that call, Steve. This is, as Jimmy mentioned, we're getting close to the end of the show, but he will be back next hour for another whole 2 hours of, not 2 hours, for another 1 hour. We're almost through 1 hour so far, 1 hour of Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin. The number to call, there are two lines open now. The number to call is 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. And Jimmy, I just want to ask you before this hour of the show ends. I mentioned at the top of the hour, it is the first Friday of Lent, and so like fish is okay for us to eat. We're supposed to fast from meat, abstain from meat right now on Friday, but fish is okay. But I mentioned that, and I'm seeing this only for the first time, but like apparently capybara is okay to eat. Capybara meat is okay to eat. Do you know about
not
this?
Not everywhere. Okay. But some aquatic mammals, because they live in the water, have been, people in various locations have been given permission to consume them. Now, capybara are not native to North America, but here in North America, we have muskrat, which is another kind of aquatic mammal. And my understanding is in Michigan, there were Indian tribes that had been given permission to eat muskrat on Fridays of Lent, and that permission still exists. And so if you're in Michigan, you might have muskrat. But and there may be places where that's true of capybara. I've heard that, but I have not verified it.
So consult your conference of Catholic bishops, or rather your diocese, if you want to know about that. As I mentioned, it's Ask Me Anything. We're doing a whole other hour with Jimmy Akin. My name is Thomas Graff, filling in for Cy Kellett. I'll be filling in again next hour right here on Catholic Answers Live.